Hey, everybody, and welcome to the new and improved Human Reaction podcast, where it's always our mission to arm you with the knowledge and mental models you need to fight media misdirection and end the mononarrative. We are happy to be upgrading our show this week from a weekly recap to shorter, single-topic deep dives on current events. This is in hopes of making our episodes more digestible and enjoyable for our listeners and viewers. We hope you enjoy it. And for members, have no fear. We will be always producing the high-quality content that you expect. If you would like to become a member and get this exclusive content, please go to humanreactionpod.com. All right, let's get into the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We appreciate you being here. If you are new to the show, please like, follow, and subscribe on YouTube, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get the show. And of course, Kyle, what do you have to say?
Well, coming from
new format.
How am I supposed to do that?
Transition's going to get polished a little bit.
Well, I just,
what do you have to say?
Well, it's actually less so about what I have. It's less so about what I have to say and more so about what our members of our Discord have to say. As they sent me this one just before recording, and this goes into our topic today, is we got a little bit of a look at the transition between the Department of Health here.
Now that we're not saying phrasing anymore?
There is quite the transition. You know, I could see those being the same person, like in a before and after photo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is before and after seed oils.
Yeah, right? So we have the Department of Health in 2021, and there's the famous meme of, you know, who was the head of that before. And then Department of Health 2025, just RFK Jr. looking like an absolute Chad.
Just a jacked Chad.
Because he's going to make America healthy again. All right, let's
and
move
not
on
with
it.
Ozempic. If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's intelpatriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
What are we talking about here, Dave?
So the Orange God Emperor is back, people. Trump is now king of the world. Just to be clear, that's how it's framed. That is literally
Dictator on day one. Some are saying it.
Some are saying it.
1776 will commence again.
Yes. But as he said himself, staffing makes policy, and he who chooses the staff roles in his upcoming administration is really the fight right now. Really, that's the best opportunity for people who are outside the administration to make an effect, is we need to talk about and create discourse around who it is that's going to fill the key roles of his cabinet, of the major administration institutions. And we'll be diving into the formation of this new administration and why it matters.
Look, I'll just say this right up front. So long as Alex Jones is press secretary, I don't care about anything else.
No joke. So just to frame it up and how important this is, I want to note this amazing clip from MSNBC about what they think about the administration's effect on democracy.
It might be the end of American bureaucracy.
Our bureaucracy really is in fundamental peril.
The foundations of American bureaucracy under attack.
They want to destroy our bureaucracy.
We are a bureaucracy in danger.
We're watching an election where people are on the ballot
openly advocating the end of bureaucracy.
That's what Republicans are doing, attacking bureaucracy, attempting to destroy bureaucracy, and they're doing it with glee.
This is the end of bureaucracy in America.
When will America stop sleepwalking towards the end of bureaucracy?
Right. It's Democrats versus, as Bill Kristol says, the end of bureaucracy.
We are essentially, as Neil put it, one vote away from sort of the end of bureaucracy as we know it.
I think our bureaucracy and the stability of that bureaucracy is really the thing on the ballot. And
when they put
so
it this
important.
Way, it sounds great. I mean, I really like that personally. I don't know about you guys. I'm into it.
Oh yeah, so
I'm all on board.
What happens to bureaucracy? Now we're going to be talking about in the SCIF. We have a new plan from Trump. So if you're not a member, make sure to get into the SCIF where you can see. We're going to do a breakdown of his 10-point plan for ending the deep state. But a lot of the decisions around that, the execution of that, how that all breaks down as an executive branch administration will depend on whom he hires. We know this from last time around. We know this in the Biden administration. Who's at the helm of state right now? Great question, right? Because it's not state. Joe Biden. Therefore, staffing makes policy, and that's why it's so important.
I heard it was a self-driving Tesla.
We've automated. Hey, if we could fire all those people because we got an AI running it, it sounds like Skynet, but, you know, hey, could, you know,
I think
depends on the AI, right?
Probably do a better job than Joe Biden personally, but I don't know.
Well, and we're beginning to get some word on some of the selections that are being made behind the scenes. We had a letter or some press release from a guy by the name of Joel Salatin. I don't really know who this guy is. Joe, you kind of know him a little bit, don't you?
I'm familiar. I'm not deeply familiar with him, but I know that he is a regenerative farmer and rancher. Polyface Farms is his outfit. He's been on Joe Rogan's podcast a number of times and is a huge advocate for reforming the way that the United States grows food, raises livestock, and has a lot of problems with, you know, the conventional agriculture model. I think a really great selection, as it seems here, he's accepting the advisor to the secretary role, or one of six positions for that, to kind of reimagine what the U.S. food system could look like. And I think it's a fantastic pick.
Well, and I'll read this right here. So it says, celebration. The deplorables and garbage people won again. Can you believe it? I've been contacted by the Trump transition team to hold some sort of position in the USDA, and I've accepted one of the six advisor to the secretary spots. My favorite congressman, Thomas Massey from Kentucky, has agreed to go in as Secretary of Agriculture, which that's a big thing. That great libertarian Republican out of the state of Kentucky. Love the guy. Probably my favorite congressman. Seeing him in the administration would be great.
Absolutely. And I love how, like, I think it was yesterday, he posted a picture of his chicken tractor, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but it's basically like a moving chicken coop that, like, allows the chickens to free range in a new spot.
It is so cool because it's actually an automated chicken tractor.
Yeah.
Tractor at that. Like, usually what you have to do with these is actually, like, tow them. Like, you pick up an end and you pull it and set it down. But this one actually runs on an electric battery.
That's solar powered.
And it collects rainwater to feed to the chickens at the center. That is this guy.
Yeah. So you see it just, like, moving around in different arrows here.
Imagine if the average congressman was like that.
Yeah. Right? Dude, like, wait, it was just, that his house?
That's his house, yeah.
That he built.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I know he built it, but I was kind of expecting something much more
rustic.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is Thomas Massey.
This is just his mobile chicken farm.
It's so great. I mean, so, like, great. Talk about the right guy for the job. I don't know. I just think this is freaking awesome.
Yeah. So this is the actual first image we got there.
Those are chickens.
Was from his blog that he posted. Thomas Massey hasn't confirmed anything yet. His Twitter is empty except for his chicken farming. But it does look like, at least from the reports, that, you know, this is a very optimistic scenario, and nothing's actually been confirmed. But we are in a situation where these communications are happening behind the scenes, and we might have got a cat out of the bag, like, early preview here on accident.
Well, and it goes to show, too, Thomas Massey and Trump have had a rocky relationship over the years. Thomas Massey was one of the only people that stood against everybody bipartisanly. During the CARES Act, during the COVID administration, and was calling out the inflation that it would cause if we implemented the CARES Act. And Donald Trump said that he's a second-rate politician, that should be primaried out, and there was an attempt to primary him out, but he's very well loved in his district. But we're kind of seeing Thomas Massie's brought into the fold to the point where Thomas Massie ran completely uncontested this last go around, and Trump endorsed him. So,
well, and as it turns out, he was right about the effects that we would experience after the CARES Act. We've experienced massive inflation. So maybe that fact has played into it a little bit too. He's like, oh, actually, maybe he was right.
Well, and it's also one of the things too, is like, we kind of in the libertarian circles, there's been this promise of bringing in a libertarian into the Trump administration with a major cabinet position. And I'm almost thinking that this isn't part of that deal.
I was going to say, I feel like this shouldn't count.
I don't think that this one really is counting in the mind of that decision-making either. I have a feeling we're probably going to end up seeing another libertarian somewhere. We have
Chase
speculation.
Oliver?
Chase Oliver. maybe Chase Oliver got it. I don't know. Secretary of Gay. Yeah.
He'd make a good HR person.
He'd be good for the HR role.
Human reaction?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He could do all of the DEI sensitivity trainings in the White House. I don't know.
One of the questions is if you don't know who Joel is, what does it mean to have him in a role as advisor or as Massie in that role? What is the difference in the Department of Agriculture, and what does that mean for that? Like, what is his regenerative agriculture approach? How would that change things for people?
I mean, the way I'm looking at it is, you know, our food system is run by massive corporations and corporate interests. And obviously Congress is lobbied heavily by interests with lots of money to throw around to get legislation written the way they want it. And, you know, right now the mainstream American food system is designed around a concentrated feedlots, right? Feedlot operations, CAFOs as they're known for short, where, you know, you have like a ton of cattle eating corn or other grains, sometimes soybeans and other things. It's tremendously, you know, not a very humane living existence for the cattle or for any livestock for that matter. And it's not terribly environmentally friendly. It's not really considering the impact that these animals have on the ground that they're standing on. And the approach of regenerative agriculture is to think about the soil and the livestock that graze that soil as a complete ecosystem. And we've heard a lot of people talk about how our soil is being depleted of nutrients. You know, monocrop agriculture, these large swaths of, you know, wheat or soy or canola or whatever it is that they're growing, are pulling nutrients out of the soil and, you know, flooding them with chemicals, you know, fertilizers, Roundup, all these other things. And regenerative
ag. Turn the friggin' frogs gay!
And yeah, probably. And so, you know.
That's Chase Oliver's role.
It's really like a.
Didn't know we had Toad on here. So,
it's carrying over from the late night of the live stream with Toad from Tower Gang.
If you missed the live stream with Toad, just prepare.
Just
be prepared
the last
for the
2 hours.
The unhinged nature of the last 2 hours of our stream. But no, I mean, I think this represents like a dramatic shift, 180 degree shift from the way we've been approaching ranching and farming to something that is honestly way more environmentally friendly, that honestly should be exciting to people on the left who care about the environment. And of course, to people like myself who try to, you know, eat a clean diet, obviously want to see people get more healthy over time. That starts with our food. That starts with our environment, our air, our water, the land. I mean, I think it's an absolutely monumental shift that is going to ruffle a lot of feathers within the well-connected lobbyist class and the interests that want to preserve the status quo right now.
Just a little excerpt from the blog itself. Joel wrote, "Perhaps we'll eliminate federal involvement in education from kindergarten to college, make every teacher accountable to performance, eliminate all federal intervention in the food system, in farming, and in energy. The Constitution, read it, doesn't allow for any of this, and it's time to examine all of it. Shut down foreign military bases, bring them all home, stop all foreign aid from USAID to military aid, sell stuff is fine, giving it isn't. I think whatever taxes we pay should be able to be designated to certain departments. That way, we the people could support or defund departments directly. The reason we have K Street is because all our freedoms are for sale. Eliminate government manipulation and the lobbyists all go home. These are simple things. Let's do it."
Based. I love this guy. I had no idea how much I loved him.
From the Lunatic Farmer blog.
Good for him. I love it.
If you want to know more about regenerative agriculture, which I entered in as a skeptic on, because most of it I find is it's more anti-technology, and I tend to like just bias myself that direction and be like, well, we've got a lot of problems. We've got a lot of things to solve, whether that's like, oh, something wrong with pulling nitrogen out of the air and putting it in the soil or whatever. I watched the documentary Sacred Cow, which was built in conjunction with Rob Wolf's book about meat diets, meat-based diets as an attribute of individual health, and kind of tracing that back to the agricultural processes to ensure better health of an individual, to the better health of the soil, of the plants, of the cows, of all the things in the chain there. Mm-hmm. It's very fascinating, very interesting stuff to get into. I can't recommend the documentary enough. I think you can find it on Amazon Prime, I believe.
Yes. Yep. And it's a great documentary, great book as well.
Yeah. So definitely check it out.
We got one more big probable announcement here is we have Alex Jones formally accepting to serve as President Trump's new press secretary. It's got 9.9 million views on Twitter.
We'll commence again.
Hey, I'm just in front of a truck. What kind of truck is that?
I was going to say that truck is sick.
It looks crazy. I love it.
And by the way, Alex Jones is looking way healthier lately. I don't know if you guys have noticed.
He stopped
this.
A lot of the drinking.
Yeah. I mean, thinner. Obviously very fit, or getting there anyways, got a bit of a belly on him, but maybe RFK Jr. can impart some advice.
He's an older guy, but I mean, yeah, that's looking. Evan, what is he holding there? That looks like a
sniper rifle.
50 cal?
Probably.
Yeah, it might be. It doesn't wicked. Quite look like a Barrett, but.
You would know.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Bennett, it's Bennett.
Barrett. I don't know.
But this is obviously a joke, I think. Oh. I'm assuming.
It would be the best reality if it wasn't.
I looked for any confirmation I could find of this, and I found none. But that doesn't mean that all hope is lost. I'm holding out hope that Alex Jones will be press secretary. I really...
That cannot go well. That is, and every level, that would go bad, right? He couldn't hold himself.
This is Trump's America now.
He'd be like, look here, I know you're a bunch of lizard people, but you know, like it would not work.
You know,
it'd be too funny, and that would be great for me, but I don't know if it'd be good for serious policy, like media press relations.
It'd be so amazing. One other suggestion that I saw, and this might be what you're getting to, Kyle, is someone said Trump should finish the downfall of the corporate press and hold press conferences only with podcasters.
Liam tweeted that.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the quotation on that, or the, you know, whatever.
Friend of the show.
Attribution.
Friend of the show, our partner,
friend
Liam
of the
McCollum.
Show, Liam McCollum. Follow his YouTube channel and his X account, M. Liam McCollum. I think that would be just absolutely fascinating. Imagine that if it was all alternative press in Trump's briefing room. I mean, what did the mainstream media, the former mainstream media, the corporate press, ever do for Trump that was positive?
You're
why
full
would
of
he invite them
today.
Back into the room?
Imagine he does like quarterly Joe Rogan experiences.
And that's the press relations.
Yes.
Well, one of the things too that, I mean, if I was a part of an administration, I would advocate for is creating your own media. Because you can do it so compellingly now with, you know, people from in the administration. You should do something much more similar to fireside chats with FDR than you would do the modern press, you know, circuit. Now, what you do want is the press secretary events that they have at the White House where they get to ask questions is really critical for press relations, right? And he needs to maintain that to be completely fair to them. What you want is that to take on its ability to drive transparency between the administration and the press. And then you use all the tools that they do use to try to push down the people who are acting in bad faith and all that kind of stuff. So doing that well is really critical for the future administration. I'm not sure Alex Jones would actually be good at that.
You're right. He would be terrible.
I don't think he'd differentiate between the friendlies and the unfriendlies good faith.
He's not going to do that. But imagine something like a White House podcast where they go on and say the press secretary leads this or somebody is hired to kind of manage the podcast. And when something major is happening with a certain agency, you have either that department head or Trump or both come in and kind of talk about it for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, something like that where it's just kind of candid, less scripty, politician-y talking point stuff. It would be way more authentic and feel way more real to the American public and to the American public that is largely moving towards these types of venues. Like, why not?
Yeah. Maybe we could get them under the HR umbrella.
Yeah.
It would be the biggest podcast.
I mean,
much bigger than
if the White House wants a HR produced podcast, we can make it happen. We got a studio space right here for
you.
Well,
we can do it from here now with StreamYard.
Yeah. That's right.
Now that we got all this new stuff,
great tools.
We'll go ahead and extend the invitation formally Mr. President, Mr. President-elect, we would love to have you as a member of the HR family.
It did sound like on Dave Smith was on Rogan yesterday, and it did sound like they were alluding to that something with a Rogan, Dave Smith, Trump podcast might happen. It did kind of sound like they were hinting at it.
Yeah, I remember that. Rogan was like, why don't I invite him on and have you here too, sort of thing.
It sounded kind of like a wink and a nod, like, what if we did that, huh?
That would
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see stuff like that. But I think that we're going to end up seeing major politicians doing these types of things and have it more into their media toolkit of how they do their just general work.
Oh, I think another example, and one of Vic's strengths, was his ability to get on the Jordan Peterson podcast regularly throughout his time. Because I think it built a closer relationship with that audience. And as far as for direct communication to people, I mean, the Trump administration would definitely do a better, would have more inoculation against the mainstream press if they had an outreach technique like that.
Yeah. maybe Vivek kind of fulfills a role like that. Who knows where we are.
I was kind of thinking that. He's such a great communicator. Like, I feel like he'd be perfect for.
Yeah.
I don't want him.
There's a few areas he could go.
Yeah.
There's a few areas it could go.
I don't know. We'll circle on that later, too.
Yeah.
Just the last point on, I don't know if you guys saw Vivek on with Charlie Kirk. They were doing campus tours and talking to, you know, potential voters who were undecided, or some were more decided. But Charlie Kirk's up there just like basically trying to own the libs, and Vivek's over there like really trying to reach these people, and like had a couple of really good interactions where people were undecided prior to their interaction, and then had said, so where do you stand now? Who are you going to vote for? And they're like, well, can I have a hat? And his MAGA hat, you know? So like he like was nice. Able to bring some people over, which I think speaks to his ability to communicate these ideas in a way that's very approachable.
Another role that has been teased by the administration. Oh, I did it wrong. I'm sorry. Don't hurt me.
I already had it cued. You could have just left it for me.
Okay, now. Sometimes I want to take control. Okay, Kyle, it's not just you anymore. Is the Department of Education. We have this tweet from Corey DeAngelis on abolishing the Department of Education. He's been teased from several different venues and angles as a potential for the Department of Ed secretary.
And this has always been what the speculation was going to be with the Libertarian cabinet position that was promised to the Libertarians at the Libertarian National Convention that you were at, Joe, and that Angela McArdle, the chairwoman of the party, has kind of teased at as well, was that it would be Corey or someone like Corey in that role, which Donald Trump has also even advocated for on the campaign trail, the abolishing of the Department of Education.
Which might speak to some meetings or discussions of this appointment may have already even happened. So we might see this come to fruition, and I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, and as far as for abolishing it, Corey's a great person for that. I mean, it lets in the Department of Indoctrination. But when it comes to just like policy reform itself, he has, you know, the record in this space. He's probably one of the biggest advocates since Milton Friedman of public policy reform for education. In fact, I think you could probably guess that a lot of the Donald Trump administration's overtures towards homeschooling, such as offering a deduction for that, is a Corey influenced, you know, that sort of field of this policy perspective. Corey's at the very center of that, and he's been the leader of that for a very long time. And here's a great one. He has this government efficiency tweet from Elon Musk about the growth of administrative staff versus teachers and principals and assistants. And you just see how, you know, administrative staff rockets up as teachers pretty much flatline over time with how schools spend their money on staff and salary.
The point I'm keying in on here is that the number of students decreased dramatically after 2020, which I have to assume was a lot of parents pulling their kids out of public school to homeschool or do co-ops or charter schools, obviously with the advent of more options for them, but also around the time of, you know, this remote learning situation.
Yeah, we had an explosion of school choice programs at the state level that have influenced that as well. So, and one of those that you did mention is private school, and that's exploded a lot too. New kinds of small form, single schoolhouse, private schools is also blossoming all over the place, called microschooling and or like Acton Academy models that are kind of plug and play. You can use the internet, use a person as a facilitator, where it's very encouraged on self-learning. Those sorts of programs itself operate completely without any government assistance or anything like that. Using a tax credit like Trump's administration is talking about, the Department of Education would be critical in facilitating the policy implementation of that. So granted, those sorts of things. The minimum effective dose here is a step in a huge direction. Betsy DeVos was the previous education secretary, did just a fine job, but it was really it was a static position. Honestly, it depends on the makeup of the Senate and whether or not you could abolish the Department of Education or not. I don't think you could do that with an executive order. You would probably need a new budget. You would need a new bill that would eliminate it, because currently the administrative language for this is there is a Department of Education, right? That's how it's written. That's what Nixon passed, right? There is a Department of Education. It does the XYZ things. That's how these bills are written. If you can't use the executive to just eliminate something the legislature tells them they must have. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So on the margin, you have the deduction of, you know, what are we going to pay for? You can put strings on that money coming from the feds. On the maximum, you have things like a large deduction for people who are alternatively educating their kids on income tax, which is the number one form of taxation for the feds, is income tax. Mm-hmm. So you have that, and then you have things like abolishing the department, which would be an amazing step in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, but at least, like you said, just allowing parents to choose how their tax dollars are spent towards their kids' education would be huge. Mm-hmm. And if they got a deduction on income tax and could apply that towards private school or charter school of some kind, I mean, that would be fantastic. I think lot of people would jump on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question, though. Yeah, all right. So if he gets appointed to that position and then it gets abolished, what's he do then? Is he done?
He resigns. Yeah.
My work here is done. Could he be moved to DOGE?
Maybe, yeah.
I do imagine that there'll be some sort of residual department that is just kind of like a little bit more bare bones, because Trump mentioned that, well, we still want to have some federal standard, like make sure that like people are learning English and people are learning, you know, basic math and whatnot. So there'll probably be something that comes in there. It's just not going to be this big leviathan of an apparatus of this Department of Education with a SWAT team kind of thing that exists.
Eliminates the ammo budget of the Department of Education. I think that's true, mostly because of the conflicted nature of the communitarian impulse from the right. Right. So like it's very okay. So the impulse to just eliminate, that's a libertarian.
Yeah.
Impulse, right? We need some standard. That's a more conservative communitarian impulse that is very real and a part of the Republican makeup that you just can't escape. So, and then lastly, part of that is this is not governed by the ideas. This is going to be governed by what's possible at this point.
Yeah,
we're now out of campaign season. We are now in
governing season,
and yeah. That executing on the things that you promised is the key, and that's going to be bound by who controls the House, which we don't know yet as we record this, and who controls the Senate, which is only a 2-vote plus Republican, and you need 60 to change code. Otherwise, you get a filibuster.
So they would need to pull a few Democrats to their side to make that happen.
And can you do that on education?
Got to bring up the stats about how the Department of Education is racist or something, and then we can get a few.
Was Department of Education 1913?
No,
that was Nixon. Yeah, it's much more recent.
EPA and Department of Education was under Nixon.
I was kind of hoping it was another Woodrow Wilson.
You would think liberals would like Nixon more, but whole spying on the DNC got to ruin that.
It was dead. We got one more, and this is just a really quick one here on Jerome Powell had some comments about the Trump transition that I found to be interesting.
Hi, Victoria Guida with Politico. Some of the president-elect's advisors have suggested that you should resign. If he asked you to leave, would you go?
No.
Can you follow up on, do you think that legally you're not required to leave?
No.
That's all. That's all I had.
He's right about that. That's true. And if that shocks you, that's okay. You're being sane, right? Because we talk about the Fed as if it was a branch of the federal government, but it's not. It's a private cartel given a government licensed monopoly.
Yeah.
So can the president determine? No, that's not the statutory powers of the president over the Fed. The Fed, he can only confirm from the list provided by the Board of Governors of the Senate, or of the Federal Reserve System itself.
Right.
So, just the people who control our money supply. To be clear, just to remind everybody, I know a lot of people will probably already know this, but for listeners who aren't as keyed in, what we did in 1913 is we said there is now a cartel system of regional banks that can manage the money supply by buying and selling treasury bonds and setting the interest rates on the returns of those treasury bonds. upon the point of sale. When they do that, they are allowed now to control the money supply. They then, each one of these like districts of the Federal Reserve banks all have a board of governors who all meet together, and they set the interest rate with a chairman that is that is confirmed by the president. Not the Senate, not the House, the president.
And you said confirmed, not chosen. You said there's a list.
Yeah.
The governors bring a list, and the president can say, I'll take turd number three.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So that's why you always get the same person, just in different skin suits.
Right. Is that literal slightly or figurative?
Slightly more liberal, slightly less liberal.
But still a lizard underneath.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a lizard person.
But I, you know, so that's an insightful moment. Now, I don't know if I have a clear opinion about Jerome Powell's performance or anything like that, but I do think it's an insightful moment for a lot of people who maybe don't understand how the Fed works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's its own politics that happen in there too. Like, oh, yeah. Even though they're all kind of terrible, some are worse than others. Like, I would rather have Powell than I would have Yellen.
Right. Well, instance. And that's interesting because Janet Yellen, after no longer being Fed chairman, went on to be like a treasurer, liberal commentator and a treasurer and all these other things. You know, like, she was very clearly of the left and was appointed into the role that she did at the time.
World Economic Forum person.
In order to best work with leftists.
Deep in that society.
I'm curious, and this is maybe more of a procedural question, but like, you know, there's a lot of talk and it's a huge rallying cry amongst libertarians to end the Fed. What does that mechanism look like? Is that a legislature? Like, is that a bill that gets passed to repeal the Fed's charter?
Yeah. So the Fed exists by a bill passed that enabled the creation of the Fed and gave it its monopoly powers. The way to end the Fed is probably a three-step process. Step number one is probably denationalizing money so that you can then create a bridge out of the dollar if you were to choose to do so.
Bitcoin, got it.
Yeah, step two is, so what that means is you're required to take dollars at the point of sale, but you can also take other things. And that would also mean changing the tax status of other things like such gold or as commodity or Bitcoin. And when we talked to
Kurt,
he said the biggest thing that you could do right now to make the difference, and I've advocated this for years, is removing the commodity standard for Bitcoin so that you then when you sell it, you don't have to take or deduct capital gains out of the sale.
Right.
So when you're doing that work, that's step number two. And step number three would be, okay, we're going to either privatize the Fed and say, okay, you're just one company now that is subject to no longer monopoly privileges. You kind of do that with step one, but that next step is there. Or step three says, okay, now this is supposed to be backed by gold. How much gold do you have? And either we're going to privatize that into a system of exchange based upon your actual gold holdings, or we nationalize that and we say this gold is now held by the Federal Treasury, and those dollars, the Fed now has to purchase its own gold to back it to the degree that it wants to do so, or if it's just going to be a paper fiat currency.
Also, a reminder is Trump went to the Bitcoin conference and courted the Bitcoin tech folks and announced the implementation of a strategic Bitcoin reserve. And Synthony Loomis came up and brought the bill forward of the bill of the plans for the United States government to buy 1 million Bitcoin and begin to use that as a commodity for this. And it's also we have RFK joining the administration here too. And he had announced something similar as part of his proposal while he was still running, which was buying up like 4 million Bitcoin. It was like even more, nice. Right? So those types of talks are happening. And also just given that the Trump family is becoming much more actively involved in the crypto space, they're doing crypto podcasts like Don Jr. and Eric are. They're launching their own World Liberty Fi token, all this stuff in the DeFi space. They're becoming much more in tune with that space as a whole and integrating themselves much more. So we're probably going to be seeing massive movements on that front when it comes to monetary stuff. Mm-hmm. With crypto being an aspect of it.
Really interesting. And so the federal government owning crypto itself is used as an asset, right? So it's like holding property or whatever, and you're using that on your balance sheet for understanding your assets and liabilities. So your liabilities is your payments out for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Military,
which is not usually counted as a liability. Mm. Actually, most military bases are counted as assets under the federal government because that's actually owned land,
tanks, things like that.
Sure, right? Sure. Yeah. Okay.
But if anything,
it would be an expense, really.
And you would apply depreciation values and stuff like that because they have a shelf life, right? Yep. So anyways, all those things would be on the balance sheet of the federal government. One of the benefits, the biggest benefit of that strategically is it then says that the federal government's now interested in this being a thing that isn't regulated out of existence because now it's part of your asset sheet. So it kind of locks future administrations into hopefully a friendlier climate for Bitcoin.
Well,
that doesn't necessarily mean a friendlier climate for the money treatment of Bitcoin. It's a friendly treatment for the commodity treatment of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, and also Trump has openly said that he doesn't think Bitcoin transactions should be taxed.
Right.
He's also openly stated that Gary Gensler is going to be gone.
That's the FTC chairman.
SEC chairman.
SEC.
Securities Exchange Commission.
Right. And so that's a major decision. We don't have any signature indication on that yet, who that's going to be. But who he chooses there would be a really big deal.
And Kamala wanted to make him Treasury Secretary. So that's the difference that we're talking about here, right? And also, just before we move on to subjects, want to guess, Bennett, which year the Federal Reserve was created?
David already said it, but I did know that it was 1913.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you something there.
Fuck Woodrow
Wilson. We have radicalized Bennett in a very real way.
He went from being a guy that just didn't care about politics, and then
look at him now. Everything.
Now he's losing friends because he voted for Trump. Welcome to the club, my friend.
Actually, you know, Bennett came in here and told us that he has had people verbally reach out to him and say that
our friendship has to end.
Yeah.
We're your family now.
Oh, did you tell him that they're gay and lame for letting politics get in the way?
No, I think that might have kind of proven their point.
It's Trump's America. You can't be gay anymore. Sorry, you're getting deported.
Going to the gulag.
The next big development here is, and where a lot of online conversation has been going around, has been around the idea of Mike Pompeo for Secretary of Defense. A lot of the America Firsters and the libertarians within the tent have a lot of things to say about Mike Pompeo.
Well,
Trump has been largely still pretty complimentary of him, especially in the podcast circuit.
This week, the Daily Mail reported that Trump floated three names for Secretary of Defense on Hugh Hewitt's show, including Senator Tom Cotton.
Also bad.
Representative Mike Waltz, which I don't know much about.
I don't know him.
And then
any relation to Tim?
I hope not. Is there a T in there?
Also a
it's
coach.
A Z. W-A-L-T-Z.
T-Z. Okay, yeah. Great. No relation then.
And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, right? The former Secretary of State. So.
I have a clip here from Dave Smith on Joe Rogan, and he's done this a few times. He was also on the live stream for election night for Patrick Pat David's big live stream, and he made this massive plea for not taking on Mike Pompeo and being cautious with him. And then here's also him on Joe Rogan the other day talking about it.
But I will say now till January 20th, the pressure should be on Trump to do better on the appointments than he did last time. He's got a lot of better people around him than he ever had in 2016 or 2020, but he was floating out Mike Pompeo as the Secretary of Defense, and he did have Mike Pompeo speak at his final campaign event. And to be clear, Mike Pompeo is Liz Cheney's pick for defense secretary. It's Hillary Clinton's pick for defense secretary. And so much of this will be lost if he puts that guy in there. He needs to keep all of the Lindsey Grahams and the Mike Pompeos and all of these guys away from his administration. Bring in the non-interventionists, man. No one wants to fight these stupid wars anymore. And that's what you ran on and won on.
I want Lindsey Graham to start a podcast.
Boy, that's so funny. I was just going to ask if that was around the Lindsey Graham part.
Then they go into talking about Lindsey Graham for a bit, and it's pretty funny.
But Dave Smith is absolutely right. This is exactly the problem, and exactly what everyone's worried about is this: like, if you do a good enough job being nice to Trump, what's going to happen? Right? Is he going to let you in the administration, or is he going to remember the many things that Pompeo has done to actually undermine America First?
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to bring forward some things that Mike Pompeo has said in the past, and then also some stories about Mike Pompeo for people to kind of get a judgment on this of like, no, conservatives, be cautious with this guy, because conservatives have this habit that I often criticize conservatives for, of like just taking up the people that are around Trump and just being like, oh yes, they're so great, and then when that person betrays them, they're like, I was always against that person. So I want to remind people of who Mike Pompeo is. And so Trump, the Jack Smith cases around the documents and all this stuff, these are all being thrown out now because it was clearly political, and they're all being thrown out now. But here is a look back on Mike Pompeo talking about those when Trump was out of office.
On what Donald Trump is facing, and is it right to charge him?
Brian, good morning. Great to be with you. Two things I think are both true at this point. First, if the allegations are true, and there's lots of indications that they are, President Trump had classified documents where he shouldn't have had them. And then when given the opportunity to return them, he chose not to do that for whatever reason. That's just, Brian, you talked about me having classified documents. I handled thousands and thousands of them over my time in Congress and then as a CIA director and Secretary of State. I suppose we can all make mistakes and get them to the wrong place, but when somebody identifies that, you got to turn them in. And so that's inconsistent with protecting America's soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. And if the allegations are true, some of these were pretty serious, important documents. And so that's wrong.
Going with Donald Trump is facing.
So, and who is the Secretary of Defense, right, real quick, because I want to set up how That's important this is. Secretary of Defense is the top of the State Department, the Executive Department, and the U.S. Armed Forces. He's the highest-ranked member of the federal cabinet, meaning the people who all report to Donald Trump. This is the most important role, period. More important than who's vice president is Secretary of Defense. So who he decides here is going to determine a lot of the overall policy. And we remember last time he wanted to pull out of Syria, couldn't pull out of Syria, had a Secretary of Defense resign, that was General Mattis, because he didn't want to fight a stupid war in Syria against the Russians.
How dare you?
Right? And we could run into exactly that same problem again, depending upon Mike Pompeo and what he decides to do. Or we had the same thing when it comes to troop movements, where he said, I want these people out of this area in Iraq and moved to fight ISIS over and to fight ISIS. And then that didn't happen. And we didn't find out till later that they just lied to him and said, oh, yeah, it's done.
Why aren't we hearing any talk of Tulsi Gabbard as Secretary of Defense?
I would be curious where she comes into all of this.
I mean, of the new coalition that Trump has built on this campaign trail, she is obviously kind of the qualified party amongst that group.
That's her primary issue, is foreign policy.
Exactly.
So, to ensure civilian control of the U.S. military, U.S. law provides that the Secretary of Defense cannot have served an active duty commissioned officer in the military in the preceding 7 years, except for generals and admirals, who cannot have served on active duty within 10 years. So it might be that because she's a National Guard, she would be disqualified to that because she's currently active duty.
I think she's still active.
I think she still is. Yeah. So
she was a few years. I know she was when she ran in 2020. So that would only be 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if she still is, but
well, she's also clearly a domestic terrorist because she's on that watch list.
That is true. She is an Assad toady.
Yeah, you know, that probably disqualifies her.
I do remember Hillary Clinton saying that. She warned us all about this Tulsi Gabbard lady.
Quick question about Pompeo. Wasn't he the one who Trump says convinced him not to release the JFK files?
Yeah, we're gonna dive into that video in a minute.
Yeah, I want to play one more here, and this is Donald Trump's favorite news site, Fox News. Mike Pompeo talking about clearly not Trump, but he's totally talking about Trump in this instance.
I was talking about the time to elect serious leaders who are thoughtful, who speak about America as the most exceptional nation in the history of civilization. They're not denigrating it. They're not throwing out whoppers. They're not spending all their time thinking about Twitter. That's what I was speaking to. It's the moment for celebrity. The moment for stars is not with us. It's the moment for America to go back to its conservative founding, its conservative ideas. And I am very confident that room cheered that idea. And I'm very confident that we're heading back that direction.
Okay. Celebrity leaders with fragile egos, big voices, people obsessed with Twitter. You leave us with no other assumption in that you are talking about your former boss and that you may be considering a serious run yourself. I mean, who else are you talking about?
No, Shannon, I'm not talking about any. I'm talking about what's happening in states, counties, school boards all across America. It is time for a thoughtfulness and a weightiness and a seriousness that I think we've kind of moved away from. And we got to get back there. It's not about President Trump or former President Trump. It's not about President Biden. It's about the American people and getting this right. And, you know, I'm not dodging your question either. We are working.
Yeah, you are dodging the question.
You're full of shit today.
Exactly.
There was a point in time where he was. There was a lot of talk about him making a run during the 2024 race, and this is what the lead
up
is.
It's so obvious. It's so obvious. You've seen any of the dialogue about Trump from the right and the criticisms of the right, especially at that time during the primaries and the early times of the primaries for 2024. Of course, he was talking about Trump. He's not talking about in general. Everyone should be this way. Come on. Come on.
So with the importance of this position and the really strong anti-war rhetoric that Trump brought to the campaign trail, how can Mike Pompeo be in the running for this position?
It's hard to say. So on, like Bennett was kind of intimating this earlier, on the Tucker Carlson show, or sorry, on Joe Rogan.
With Tucker Carlson.
After the Tucker Carlson, he's talking about exactly how... In the release of the JFK files MLK files, that a really great person
told him not to do it,
and you would trust this person. He's like, why?
And now he's just going to do it.
The disconnect doesn't make sense to me. Like the disconnect from what Mike Pompeo said and done, his vision for American foreign policy, and Trump's, it just does not make sense why Trump is in such clear support, and noting how much later this is from these statements and from the things that Mike Pompeo has done in the intervening time.
Yeah,
there is a part of me that is just hoping that this is a long game that Trump's doing, and he did this to Mitt Romney in 2016, where he brought Mitt Romney into the fold, and he's like whining and dining him and doing all this stuff, and it's like, yeah, you're gonna get a position, bro, and then just like embarrassed him.
Ooh.
Remember that moment?
I don't. I don't.
Yes, yeah, I do.
That
I
was a big one. And yeah. he kind of did a similar thing with Chris Christie as well. And I there's a part of me that's almost like, what if that's what he's doing to Mike Pompeo?
That'd be interesting.
I mean, we have to hope so. Because, I mean, like a lot of the coalition confidence in the Trump campaign was that he wouldn't make the same staffing mistakes that he made in his first term. This mm-hmm. is one of those mistakes.
And the most critical one. Like, it's, this is the topic.
Because all these other
Secretary
things
Secretary of Transportation, I don't give a shit about. I don't care about that. I don't care about the Secretary. I mean, like, Health and Human Services, great. You know, we already know who that's going to be. But Secretary of Defense is the most critical one. It's a $1 trillion decision.
Yeah.
Right. And if you screw that up, like the amount of people who are going to go like, it's going to be like Obama in 2013 when he got elected and then decided to go to war with Syria like the next day because of a gas attack and a red line.
And then he got a peace prize for not going to war.
Yeah, right. Like, this is after the re-elect. But you know what I mean? Like this was very consequential, and the entire anti-war left turned against Obama, and it destroyed his legacy as a left-wing candidate.
And that's when we got wokeism because he had to turn to, cultural issues to repair his base.
Yes, right.
Thanks a lot, Obama.
Yeah, thanks, Obama. And so we also have Tucker Carlson talking about some of the accusations around Pompeo and Julian Assange, which I think is very interesting and very informative for how we should think about this stuff.
The next day, I'll never forget it, I went quail hunting, and I was driving back, and I got a phone call from Mike Pompeo's lawyer. Mike Pompeo was the Secretary of State, but before then, he was the director of the CIA. And in that position, he plotted the murder of Julian Assange. So he is a criminal, as far as I'm concerned. But his lawyer called me and said, you know, you should know that anyone who tells you the contents of classified documents has committed a crime. He's threatening me. He's in my car. With my dog sitting next to me, I'll never forget this. And I said, are you really saying that to reveal that the U.S. government had a role in the murder of a democratically elected president, to say that out loud, that's the crime? What about the actual crime, which is murdering a president? Like, you're covering up for that, Mike Pompeo.
What did he say to that?
He had no response at all. And so Mike Pompeo is the one who pressed Trump to keep those documents secret. And so it's like, what's crazy to me is not just that Pompeo did that. I think Pompeo is a really sinister person and a criminal. I think that because the facts suggest that he was caught. Yahoo News, Mike Isikoff wrote a long piece on this several years ago. His employees went to Mike Isikoff and said, hey, Mike Pompeo was plotting to murder Julian Assange, who's never even been charged with a crime in the United States, as CIA director. That's illegal. You're not allowed. Federal employees are not allowed to just kill people they don't like. Okay. Just to set the baseline here. So that's who Mike Pompeo is. But he somehow intimidated Trump into not releasing this. Well, okay. That's all bad, right? I think it's criminal behavior. What's crazy is how Mike Pompeo is treated. He's treated as like a Republican poobah in good standing. He fully expects to become the Secretary of Defense in a Trump administration, which is like completely insane. Why would you take a criminal and give him nuclear weapons? Okay, that's my view. That's a common sense view. And like he goes to fundraisers and dinners and everyone's like, hey, Mike Pompeo. It's like, no, you're the guy who kept information the public has a right to know secret. You're the guy who plotted the murder of someone who committed no crime. You are the outlaw. You are the bad guy. But no, he's treated as like, you know, like a pillar of Republican Washington. I think it's mind bending to watch that.
And it gets worse, right? It gets worse because later after this, when talking about the JFK files, Joe Rogan asked Trump about why he didn't release more. And he refers to exactly the same thing that Tucker Carlson refers to here, which is that wanted to release more, but didn't because a good guy said not to. Do we want to play that clip or am I?
I have it queued up if we want to.
Let's get into it just because I don't want you to just believe me. It's
yeah,
it's real.
See the full context of this. I think there's a good narrative trail to see the whole context.
One of the things that I want to talk to you about is the JFK files. And one of the things that you said was that if they showed you what they showed me, this was your quote, you wouldn't want people to know it either.
So I opened them up partially. I was met with from good people. I mean, you know, look, I mean, good people, people that were well-meaning. Mike Pompeo was one of them. He's a good person. They called me. They said, sir, would rather have you not. And I did open them. But I was asked by some people not to open them. There's a Martin Luther King file, too, by the way, that they'd like to see. I don't know if you know, but there is that. But JFK in particular. So they called me. A lot of good people called me. People that I, you know, that you would find reasonable people. And they asked me not to do it. So I said, well, we'll close it for another time. But if I win, I'm going to open them up. I'm just going to open enough.
Why didn't you open it up the first time?
Because
what was the hesitation?
Addresses, people that are still living. There are people that are affected. And there could be some national security reason that that I don't have to necessarily know about. But some very good, talented people asked me not to do it. I opened it up and then they said, would it be possible for us to do that a different day?
What? How much of it did you read into?
I think it's going to be just fine to open it. Let me put it that way. I think it's fine. It's going to be tough.
Got it there.
It's very – so things that I don't necessarily have to know about. So it's important to understand, and I actually think Tucker Carlson's wrong in this sense.
Gasp.
Plausible deniability.
How dare you?
The National Security Administration, who governs the CIA. There's a small board of people who are made up of that, and then the Gang of Eight who are above them. They, in the enabling language that created the covert ops of the CIA, says, basically, in short, and we reviewed this in a SCIF. If you're a member, you can authenticate what I'm saying, that as long as it's plausibly deniable, it is within the charter of the CIA to do it. Now, I think that's unconstitutional, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you can have an executive branch who gives itself its own power based upon the enabling language of the CIA that says the CIA can do whatever the National Security Agency says it can.
Which is what Tucker's going at. But you're just saying of like how things actually are.
Yes, but how things actually are. And saying the ought versus the is, right? The is in this very clearly gives the CIA the ability to assassinate. They shouldn't. In fact, the Church Commission suggested it was a scandal that the Church Commission did. Remember the heart attack gun? Right, those sorts of things are features of the CIA's rogueness as an agency, as we understand it. But we have yet to ever change the foundational enabling of the CIA's powers in that sense. And it just means changing one section of a bill passed in the 1940s that says the CIA can collect intelligence for the president and do anything else he needs done. And saying, except for assassinating and murdering, or basically just illuminating that whatever he else needs done.
And do anything else he needs done.
Pretty much. Remember, yeah, that's a shorthand, but that's pretty much what it
but
says.
But that's the implications are nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's where this entire edifice of the covert ops of the CIA is based upon, is one little line of that in the enabling language passed by Congress in the 1948, I want to say. Late 1940s, early 1950s. I can forget because you have the initial name and language, which doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they were going to do with it. And then we have the now declassified National Security Agency documents that show how they interpreted that to mean we can now rig elections everywhere around the world. We can now purchase media companies to indoctrinate all around the world, including America. We can now do all these things, all are implied from that first enabling language from Congress. If you want to change that, all you have to do is change that first enabling language. That's how Congress can make a difference. Now, as the administration, of course, he could just do an executive order say, we're done doing these things. But because of plausible deniability is the foundation of the NSA's interpretation, not National Security Agencies,
yeah.
Or sorry, not National Security Agencies, actually National Security Committee, NSC. I always say A for some reason, it's just stuck there. The NSC's interpretation of that is, oh, we can all do all these things as long as it's not plausibly deniable, or as long as it's plausibly deniable, as long as we can, and what that means is as long as we can lie about it and not get caught, we can do it.
Wow.
So that's how much of a rogue agency the CIA is enabled by a council that's supposedly there, and now with the Gang of Eight on top of it, it's their ability to actually govern this thing. So could they do that? No, I don't think. Not legally by my interpretation of the Constitution, but not by code. So as it currently sits, if you were to sue the National Security Council on its actions on behalf of the CIA, as like holding them accountable for the CIA's action, I don't think it could go anywhere, right? Because
Because they're protected.
Yeah, yeah. Functionally.
Yeah.
By code and then by their interpretation of code, as we now know. You know, it's funny. It's until like the mid-2000s, we didn't even know that existed, that they decided to interpret the code that way and therefore justify all the programming.
Wow. But now we know. And so I guess now we have the burden of knowledge and doing something about it if we care to, right. If there's the political will to. And that's the other big question. It's like, could Congress do something about it? Yes. Will they? What do you think? What are the chances?
Very low. No, zero. Yeah, because they look to the intelligence agency heads and the intelligence committee heads as if they're gods, right? They just say like, and on top of that, the whole structure around secrecy and what's classified and declassified creates huge impediments for everyday congressmen to actually understand what's going on. So the incentive structure all leads the opposite way, just to avoid that topic and focus on other issues. Not to mention democracy itself kind of creates the incentive to avoid that, right? If you're a businessman who came in out of nowhere, you're not looking, oh, well, I'm really curious what the NSA is doing or what the securities councils are doing or what the CIA is doing. You care more about appeasing local constituents and making sure America is, you know, running well from your niche that got you involved in politics. The vast minority of people get involved in politics from the candidate level because of foreign policy. So there's just nothing there. Yeah. And I think, don't get me wrong, Trump and the kind of more dissident right has moved the ball further than anyone has since the Church Committee on this issue. RFK is a huge change in that. Absolutely. You got great actors like Michael Schellenberger, Mike Benz, and so many people from the media side raising these issues and pointing them out specifically from the area of the censorship industrial complex, which gives you a better insight into how the CIA operates now, mostly through cutouts, mostly through nonprofits and things like that, private security, private crime, organized crime, stuff like that. Those kind of insights now are bigger than they've been any other time since I entered politics in 2008. But I don't think that they are anywhere near the kind of consensus yet to where you could actually get pressure on officials. So we have a long build of, you know, raising awareness about why this is an issue, why you can have 51 people say the Biden laptop is Russian disinformation, why you can pre-bunk that to social media companies before it even came out.
It appears to be.
Right. It appears to be. Right. Why that language happens and no one gets held accountable for it. Why those people still have security clearances. Right. That's how unresponsive this system is and how far we are from being able to reform it. But we had the best opportunity now that we've had any year prior. But we still have a long ways to go before I think we have the public understanding of how to change and what to change to. Yeah. Because I think a tremendous number of Republicans right now, if you say we're going to reform the Central Intelligence Agency, you're going to say, well, how are we going to gather intelligence then? Right, as if that's their function. They don't know about the rest of this stuff. It's completely ignorant to them.
The last thing here is another major question that's kind of arisen, is what's going to happen with J.D. Vance's Senate seat now that he's vice president, right? In Ohio, we have
the governor is the one who appoints this. It's not a special election like it is in other states. And the Ohio governor is a bit of a moderate Republican. What do you guys think is going to happen there?
Yeah, at first on the live stream, I was like, ooh, that's exciting, right? Because getting Vivek as a senator would be really, it'd be a good win for for all kinds of reasons. Some states do special elections based upon this. That's what Montana does, for example. But other states do not. Ohio does not. They have the executive branch appoints the new senator. I don't think the current senator is likely to, based upon the reputation.
Current governor
is likely to lean that way based upon reputation, but I don't know enough to be able to say for certain.
Well, and to what degree can the incoming Trump administration apply suggestions or some kind of pressure on that decision?
It depends on a lot of things I don't know. Like, for example, does this person have ambitions for higher office? Like, do they want to move to the House after they're filled their term as governor? Do they even have term limits for governor in Ohio? There's all kinds of things I don't know. But I do think it's an interesting moment that we're in. We're going to see this exact scenario play out in other places that people get appointed. For example, who fills Thomas Massey if he becomes AG? Mm-hmm. Or not AG.
Secretary of Ag.
Secretary of Ag. Same thing with AG, right? If they pull somebody else for that, Tom Cotton or whatever, for AG. All those Senate roles, all those congressional roles are going to need to be filled. And how are they going to go depends on the localities.
We're all longtime Vivek fans. Is this an area that we would like to see him in? Mm. I feel like my preference would be to see him in the cabinet in some facility.
I was thinking the same thing, but I also don't know which he'd be more useful.
Well, yeah. And I guess
gut tells me somewhere in the executive branch is where he should exist. I feel like he's much more of that mind and somewhere where he can also still be a very like outwardly, like he's kind of his own rogue entity in a sense, rather than being in the Senate. But
that's where you get to like a special counsel or special, advisor to. There's all those roles in there where you can exercise a lot of outward latitude. Because you don't have an official of a role, you're not in charge of staff as much, so there's not as many rules about what you can and can't do outside. If we can get him a security clearance, that would be really great in a lot of ways. So that would probably require an official role. There's a trade-off there. There's so much there. There's so many trade-offs because I want him as messenger, right? In so many ways.
He's such a unique individual in comparison to everybody else in question in all of these positions. It's hard to like fit him in where you would want him to be.
But you have someone with executive experience and staff running experience and cutting experience where you kind of want that person in charge of some agency so that they can just start gutting, right? Because believe he would do that. He wouldn't succumb to the pressures of the establishment status
quo. I'd be curious how DOGE formulates the Department of Government Efficiency that Elon Musk is trying to meme Doge into existence for it.
Yeah.
I'd be curious because I could see him playing a major role in that. Sure. And if that just becomes like, there's this executive board that is like the czar of gutting everything, you know, like I could see him being like, you know, it's like a trifecta. There's like Ron Paul, Elon Musk, Vivek, something like that. Totally. That'd be crazy. That'd be kind of dope.
That'd be wild. To what degree does Vivek's next role impact his future political aspirations, assuming he wants to run for president, say, in 2028? Does he have more power coming from the Senate versus from the cabinet, or does that matter?
Oh, Senate would be way more advantageous for running. Yeah, way more. I mean, you get the same microphone, you get a greater degree of independence, right? Because then you can criticize Trump if needed. And then you get a greater degree of ability to outreach directly to established figures, actors, donors, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's really the Vivek can self-fund to some degree, but like until you get to the place where you have a good working relationship with the Club for Growth, impossible to run for president. Right? It's scale of donating is just so much bigger. Like $1 million a pop versus hundreds of millions of dollars a pop.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what that looks like.
It'll come down to, I believe it's Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio currently, come down to his decision and maybe some outward political pressure. But when do we normally find out? How long will it be until we know?
Probably in the new year.
It's going to be a process between now and January 20th of people getting hired and various different things kind of queuing up. Everyone makes a transition in January, right? So then it's going to set off special elections who are then usually scheduled for later. They'll sometimes be an appointee in the
meantime
between today, Junior.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's because that's what it was when, because like there'll also be special elections elsewhere,
right?
Depending on who gets selected for things. Thomas Massie being an example, if he's actually Secretary of Ag, because that's what happened when our Congressman Ryan Zinke was appointed to
Secretary of the Interior.
Yeah, we then got thrust into like a 3-month special election here,
2017.
Yep. Yeah, so it'll.
That's when the body slamming happened.
Yeah.
Glorious event.
That is when that happened.
The one thing we're known for. That was so funny with Toad, because he's like, hey, isn't that the guy that body slammed somebody?
Yeah,
like,
on our live stream, yeah, one of our guests referenced that. He was like, yep. I'm very familiar with that story.
Yes. All right. Well, so that's it.
More will unfold in the coming days and weeks as we head towards the end of the year and towards the inauguration. January 20th.
1776 will commence again.
as we close out, our SCIF episode this week is going to be going over deconstructing the deep state, where Donald Trump released last night his 10-point plan to dismantle the deep state. And we're going to kind of go through it each point by point, give our, like, expand on things, criticize certain things. Is this helpful? Is this not helpful? Etc.
Throughout. And we are going to head to the SCIF right now. If you are not a member, you can figure out how to become one and get access to our exclusive content at humanreactionpod.com. Members, we'll see you in the SCIF. Everybody, thank you for watching. See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
if he asked you to leave, would you go?
No.